guys, welcome to episode 176 of a Wrestling Gal podcast, providing you with the female perspective on all things wrestling. Join me, your host and wrestling enthusiast, Ella J. As today, I am joined by interviewer, commentator, and host of WrestleTea, Sam Laterna. Now let's chat. Hello, everybody. Today, I am joined by pro wrestling interviewer, commentator, and host of WrestleTea, Sam Laterna. So how are you doing today, Sam?
I'm doing well. I just got back from a workout and now I'm talking to you, so I can't complain.
You are always on the grind, my girl. We will talk about fitness and all of that fun stuff in a bit, but throughout this last, I would say, like 15 months of the world going crazy, how have you managed to stay positive? We all know how you've kept sane and kept busy, but how have you stayed positive, you think?
So I'd say, like, generally, like, my work and what I've been working towards over the last year in wrestling broadcasting is what's, like, kept me afloat mentally, because the pandemic has been crazy for so many people. And I'm grateful that after the first, like, 3 or so months, I kind of started viewing this as, like, the temporary normal. And I just dealt with it and decided to, like, move forward with my life and, you know, making career moves in a very dangerous time to be, you know, traveling for wrestling. But concurrently with the pandemic happening, I was actually going through some stuff in my life, just not really sure what was happening. I had stopped wrestling and knew that I had something to contribute to wrestling still, but I didn't know what it was. So I started doing, like, affirmations, meditating, stuff like that. And I still do it to this day. And I truly believe that changing my mindset has really helped propel me career-wise as well within the realm of broadcasting.
You know what, though? I was never really one who did, like, affirmations or really focused in on my mental health, because workers just constantly on the go all the time. So it kind of gets put aside a lot of times. But I've actually been, like, reading, like, books and, like, have an affirmation card set, and they actually, like, do help. I was never really one that, like, really got invested in them, but they actually do really help.
Yeah, absolutely. You'd be surprised at how malleable the brain is. It takes 3 weeks to make or break a habit. And it's the same with mindset, too. I love that. I have the cards, too. I have little affirmation cards. Oh, my gosh.
Love that. So I'm curious, too. Obviously, like you said, this last year has been crazy. So from your perspective, and I'm sure you can relate to this, what is your method or secret to balancing your shoot jobs at multiple points? Not obviously right now, but how do you balance shoot jobs with hosting, interviewing, commentating, editing, publishing, and your basically daily, everyday life in general? What are your methods on how you balance it all?
So right now I am only doing broadcasting, looking for another shoot job. But when I did have to balance all of those things, I got really overwhelmed at some points. But what kept me going was literally just thinking that one day, like, this will be a means to an end, basically meaning that I can do broadcasting full time one day. That is the goal. So just knowing that my job that I usually do shoot wise, which is hospitality, serving, stuff like that, it's a means to an end. So it's work that's positive and it's helping me, you know, work towards my goal, my dream within broadcasting. So everything kind of works itself out, just being grateful, even though sometimes I don't want to be at my shoot job. And then as far as my regular life goes, I've sacrificed so much over the past year to prioritize broadcasting and various projects related to that. And I think the best advice I'd say is devote at least 1 or 2 days to whatever you're working on. Don't work your shoot job. And just have those days open for when business needs to happen. That's what I do. I have Mondays, I have Wednesdays open all the time, no matter what, because that's when I try and schedule my interviews.
Yeah, I completely understand that grind and that sacrifice between your shoot job and then trying to make this a full-time thing in broadcasting and interviewing and all that. I completely relate. And we've definitely, at least I've had to go to kind of different lengths now and to stay organized and sane. So what are some of your ways then that you are allowed to stay organized or sane with your insane schedule?
Definitely scheduling, like I said, my dog 100,000% keeps me sane. I do not know what I would do without my dog Tata. Everyone sees her on social media. I love her. I would say like she's kind of been my rock through this, and I know that sounds super silly because she's not a human being, but she's always here when I come home from like a booking. She's always here when I come back from my shoot job when I've had a horrible day at work. So the dog for sure. And then finding those moments for you to do things that you enjoy outside of the realm of work. Like, I love what I do. I love broadcasting and wrestling. I'm so passionate about pro wrestling itself, but I also have a lot of other eclectic interests. Like, I love art. I majored in art history and curatorial studies in college. So finding that time to like engage that creative outlet is really important to me, and making time for my friends because that's something that I love doing, but I've sacrificed over the past year and a half, to further my career.
Yeah, I completely understand it. It too, you can get to points where you're really burnt out and stuff. So, what are some of your strategies to maybe not preventing, but coping with those moments of burnout? Because it's bound to happen at times with all the sacrifices and you want to move forward. But what are ways that you cope or maybe prevent those moments of burnout?
I'm really bad at preventing moments of burnout because I kind of tend to run myself thin. But when I do get burnt out, what I like to do is kind of just reset, because when I'm burnt out, I tend to get really negative and start saying like, "Oh my God, why are you doing this? You're putting all this work into this, and you're working at a restaurant, and what is all this for?" But then I think like, what am I grateful for? And then I think of at least five things that I'm in the present moment grateful for. And at least two of those are always related to opportunities that I've been blessed to have in wrestling. And it really puts other things into perspective in that way. And I know this sounds kind of silly, but I live in New York City and I take the subway a lot. And I see a lot of people that are way worse for wear than I, homeless people, people who've been abandoned, refugees, you name it. So seeing people like that having a really, really hard time, and then being so blessed also really gets me out of my funk.
There's definite moments I'm sure you can attest to where you're just so worn down and you have those off days and it sometimes you lose sight of the things that you should be grateful for, but definitely being aware of like everything you do have, it's hard, but it's much, especially much needed so you don't get burnt out and you learn to appreciate the things that you do have.
Absolutely.
Now, I am curious too, can you give us in some insight into that speech that your good friend and fellow wrestler Masha Slamovich gave you that really motivated you to progress forward and really kind of start your show, WrestleTea?
Oh my gosh, this is the tea. I've never spoken about this.
Ooh, okay.
Okay, let's see. So, Masha had been back from a tour in Canada, needed a part-time shoot job to balance wrestling out. So I got her a job at the restaurant I was working at. We wound up having a blast working there, but I hadn't been wrestling since I had moved back in 2019 for about three, no, like I'd moved, yeah, at that time, maybe 3 months. I had moved from the Midwest. I had been living there in Cincinnati, Ohio for 9 months trying to further my wrestling career at that time. So I was really down. I had like this lingering back injury that had happened earlier in that year that ultimately led me to not want to wrestle again. And I was just really depressed, and I've never been that depressed in my whole life. I'm usually pretty good about like keeping my wits about me with that stuff, but yeah, definitely got super depressed, and I started crying one day in our coat check room to Masha, and she just basically said like, "You have so much to offer. Like, just basically get your shit together. You know that you have something to offer. Don't let anyone tell you that you don't have anything to offer, because a mutual person that we both know had maybe told me I didn't have the ambition at the time to be doing wrestling or be in the wrestling business." And so that, along with Masha's speech, really just triggered me to move forward. And I swear to God, the day after, like, Masha said that to me, I started Wrestle Tea.
Thank God.
Yeah. Like, she's just such a beacon of light. Love her. But she can kick ass. Don't forget that, guys.
Yeah, for sure. You've known Masha for years now, I believe. So can you tell us just more about your friendship with her? Obviously, you guys work out together a lot. You worked together at the restaurant. You've wrestled, trained together, all of that. So give us some insight into your friendship with her, just in general.
Yeah, sure. Okay, without saying too much, I guess. Got to keep Masha's mystique, but just kidding. But as far as Masha and my's friendship goes, we've known each other since 2015, actually, and we began training together. I think she trained there 9 months before me at World of Unpredictable Wrestling with Johnny Rods in Brooklyn, New York, and we were both there around the same time. We were one of maybe four girls that were there at the time. It was actually myself, Masha, MJ Jenkins, and Karen Q, both one former NXT, one current NXT superstar. So we had the pleasure of training amongst such talented women, and I learned so much from Masha as well. She's always been the way she is, like, total badass, focused on her craft. And this was when she was 16 years old, mind you. So even though there's an age difference between us, I think we just really respect the business so much and have a mutual understanding of, like, protecting it in that way. I know that sounds really old school, but as of recently, over the last year and a half, 2 years, that Masha and I have gotten much closer, that's definitely something that we both agree on. And yeah, we're just having so much fun when we do get to travel together and be on shows together. It's a blessing to get to travel with my best friend.
Yeah. How did you guys then, I guess, balance? Because she was stuck in Japan for literally nearly a year, almost a year to the day. How did you kind of balance that long distancing? Obviously, I have online friends as well, too, but you're kind of used to being around somebody all the time, and then they're just basically gone for a whole entire year.
Yeah. Well, I've gotten, like, really good at communicating with my friends that I have, you know, long distance. Because when I trained at Storms, for example, I have friends from all over the world who were there with me, and they're lifelong friends, but, you know, I might never see them again for the next couple of years because of this pandemic, you know, so just balancing that. But with Masha particularly, we would actually talk, like, text wise more so than anything, and then do occasional video chats. But it was such a weird time with the pandemic.
Yeah.
And all of that, that we were honestly an intermittent touch. And Masha was so focused on what she was doing in Japan, of course, just literally 24 hours a day training, basically. So I knew she was doing that. I knew that was her path. And I just waited for her to get back. You know, some friendships, you don't have to talk to someone every day to, like, you know that person has your back. And I very much know that she has my back and that I have hers.
Yeah, it's those friendships that you really cherish. Like you said, you don't need to talk every day to feel, like, validated. You're comfortable enough and you trust each other enough and your friendship is deep enough to survive it, basically.
Definitely, yeah. And now that she's back in the States, I see her much more often, obviously.
Yeah, very much so. Now, going back to your interviewing aspects and everything you do, I know you've said that you've lost an interview due to a corrupted file, and similar situations like that happen, as nobody's perfect and things don't go always as planned sometimes, trust me. So do you have any instances where things didn't go quite as planned for an interview that aren't too embarrassing that you can share?
Oh my gosh, I am literally the queen of tech mishaps, both in person, on site, and just via remote interviews. I'm just not a techie person. Coming into broadcasting, I've had to learn how to self-produce, you know, on the spot. So that has been a learning process. But I guess I can, I'll share this. The first time that I got my, like, first really, 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 like, huge opportunity to do interviews somewhere was supposed to be at Beyond's Please Wear Sunscreen or something like that over the summer. Beyond's first event at Atlantic City since the pandemic, basically. Drew Cordero had given me permission to do Wrestle Tea interviews, and I was supposed to interview Max Caster the first time. My tech totally failed me. The waves in the background of the pier, totally majestic looking, but ruined the audio. And Max was gracious enough to interview again 2 weeks later, I believe, at WrestlePro, which was super classy of him. And yeah, so much appreciated to Max, who gave me a fantastic interview.
Yeah, I've had, luckily that hasn't happened to me where everything was just lost. I've definitely had like altered audio and it took a lot of work to get it fixed, but I've definitely forgotten to hit the record button and then realized like 5 minutes in, I'm like, oh my God, that's happened a few times. And so
oh
you're
my
definitely
gosh, that's
not
the worst.
Yeah. And again, it was only like my second interview ever, like on Skype, and then I look up and then the stop recording button is not there. And I'm like, oh my God. But yeah. Yeah, nobody's perfect though, like you said. So we definitely all have our blunders for sure. Now, a good interviewer as well also will typically delve into research on the interviewee prior to recording. So out of all the guests that you have had specifically on WrestleTea, who has kind of been the most fun to research or one that you found some really good nuggets of information on, or tea, as you like to say?
Well, let's see. Trying to think into my interviews are kind of blanking on me right now. One thing I will say is this. It's very strange that WrestleTea has bred this idea that I want to get all the tea, even the non-professional tea. So I have so much tea, it's absolutely unfathomable, but I keep my mouth shut because most of these things have nothing to do with me. But I have tons of tea on my interviewees as well, but I wouldn't want to spill that tea.
Yeah.
On air. But in terms of research, I definitely think that when I first started out, and I thought that I would be interviewing more legends and stuff like that, I was like super thoroughly researching them because I didn't want, you know, so-and-so person to think that I was unprofessional or whatever. Mm-hmm. For example, one of my first interviews with Gangrel, I interviewed that for like a whole, researched that for a whole week. And then he was just super nice, very chill, very laid back, and, you know, made me feel at ease. I clearly was over-prepared in a way.
Better over than under though, Sam, for sure.
I agree.
Trust me, there's definitely, it's hard though sometimes when it is like a legend or somebody who's done so many interviews and you want to make it different or have like ask questions from a different perspective. It's really hard sometimes. So I can definitely relate, especially absolutely. With somebody like Gangrel who has done like probably hundreds of interviews.
Oh yeah. Like, and you know, I'm sure there's not a question that he has not been asked, but he's very gracious, as are many of the other legends, to just answer them because they know that it's what the people want to listen to.
Yeah. Speaking of wrestling history, though, that you know and love all as well, what do you think is the strangest or randomest fact or story that you have learned through studying wrestling history?
Ooh, okay. Let's see. Random fact. You know what? I do have some random facts. I'm trying to think of which one I should say.
You can say more than one, two.
Okay. Cool. All right, let's see. I think that a lot of people would be surprised to know that, what's his name? Oh, who is it? Is it Ivan Kolov, I believe? Is actually not like Russian.
I did not know that.
Or rather, might be of Russian descent, but mm-hmm. is like native English speaking. I know that's like a really nerdy one to say. Also, one that always like left me really shocked, I guess. And I'm really big into shock value. Like I love being surprised in wrestling because I've just been watching for so long, you know, now working in it for a couple of years. But I always thought it was crazy just from a respect perspective that Kerry Von Erich wrestled for so long without people knowing that he had a prosthetic foot. And while he still wasn't like on his A game like he had been before, no one would have ever thought that he had a prosthesis on. So major respect to Kerry Von Erich for that.
Yeah, I don't think I knew that until I saw the Dark Side of the Ring series.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I have Dark Side of the Ring, yes. I wasn't a super big fan of that specific episode, but I love Dark Side of the Ring.
Yeah.
There's just so much to say about the Von Erichs. I could go on for days. Like, I would love to make a full-length documentary or like film on them in my older years.
You need to pitch that, Sam. I know you're doing a lot, but maybe down the line, I think that would be a cool pitch.
Oh yeah, that would be sick. I don't want to get my plate too full right now. But yeah, major respect and love for wrestling dynasties and the Von Erichs particularly.
Of course. Talking about wrestling today, though, we've seen this kind of rise in all women shows and promotion, and you've even commentated and broadcasted from a few of them. But what are your thoughts on kind of this all women shows like WWR, Flawless, Mission Pro, and pretty soon NWA Empower?
Oh my God. I love it. I think that all women on all rungs of, the professional ladder in wrestling need more opportunities. And I think that women's wrestling specifically has made great strides towards that over the past like 7-8 years, both on television and on the indies. Mm-hmm. Right now, I think it's just really important for that representation to be shown on women's shows. Having an all-female crew, you know, like ladies can put together ring crew. I was astounded at WWR Plus, the reboot last month. I was there to do some interviews for a project and none of the ring crew showed up. So the ladies, we all set up the ring and it was such a beautiful, empowering thing to see. I'd never seen anything like it. The only dudes there were Jerry from IWTV and Eel O'Neill. So it really felt like it was our thing, at least to me. I'm like super corny, I guess, emotional with wrestling, but it was really symbolic and I got to get it on camera for the project, the behind the scenes project I did for WWR Plus. And I love WWR Plus specifically because I feel like it's a place that's giving opportunities to women that have deserved it for so long. Cause sometimes it's, you know, hard to, you know, or easy to get lost in the shuffle of women who are, you know, newly released and now hot on the indies and blah, blah, blah. So there's so many women that are now getting that opportunity, particularly Becca, of course, Masha Slamovich, who's now mm-hmm. building her name, and other ladies who I find so entertaining, like Little Mean Kathleen mm-hmm. and Delmi Exo now, you know, making her mark as a single star. So I have nothing but high praise for WWR Plus and all of the ladies indies that are happening right now. And I want to commentate, host, or interview at all of them. But also Mission Pro has been a really big part of the last few months of my career. And I'm so grateful for Thunder Rosa and everyone there for giving me that opportunity because it was my first real like MC gig and it made me extremely nervous to think, hey, you got to go warm up the crowd. Thunder Rosa said so, but you've never really done this aspect of this job before. But it felt really good. It was really organic and the crowd was so loving, so awesome. And I feel like it's a crowd I can like grow with and develop a rapport with. And the ladies there, top to bottom, the show is run impeccably.
I'm curious too, in everything that you are doing, commentating, interviewing, hosting, emceeing, like you said, color commentary, editing, all of that, we're in such an industry that is very wrestling media and content saturated today, and it can be really hard not to compare yourself to others. So how you personally kind of combat that comparison or self-doubt in an industry like this? Like we said, nobody's perfect, but what are the ways that you kind of combat that comparison or self-doubt?
So to be perfectly honest, I just try and keep myself out of situations where I find myself like lurking on like someone's page who's doing the same thing as me. I know that sounds kind of weird, but
I'm
if it's out of sight,
that. I'm guilty right? of that too, Sam.
Out of sight, out of mind. I'm only thinking of me and my career. If that makes sense when other people are out of sight, out of mind. But another component of that has also been, I think that when I first began and started to get, and I'm still very new to this, but like say the first 6 months that I did this, I very much so was uncertain of where I stood and wanted to like keep my spot per se and have more people book me and elevate myself. Right. But now I think that karmically, if I can give an opportunity to, you know, a woman who wants to get her start as a ring announcer at a promotion that I'm just not able to be at regularly or something like that. For me, that is really fulfilling. And there's someone I've been in contact with about that. So like to be able to give back in a way to broadcasting, I think it's very much so full circle in that way. And that helps me also feel good and validate my own career, if that makes sense. Cause it's like, I'm in a position to help someone else get work. And that's a beautiful thing.
Now, if you could kind of brand the wrestling version of The View or The Talk into a daily talk show of your own, who else would you have join you as your co-host from the wrestling, media, or content creation world?
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Let's see. Okay, so I'm thinking of, like, 80s era, like, WWF wrestling talk show with Vince and Bobby Heenan. And who would be my partners? I think that, so Masha has great, like, really corny comedic timing when she's not kicking ass. So I have to have Masha on. And then, you know, Erica Lee is really freaking funny.
I know.
And also offers a great perspective on so many social issues too. So she's a champion of so many causes. So, you know, need that balance. And then one more lady. You know what? This is a reach, but I really like Chelsea Green. I've been a fan of hers forever, both her in-ring work as well as just her social media. It's great. And now her podcast is also taking off. So I think Chelsea Green would make a really good addition. Those would be my tentative three, just based on what they bring to the table.
So you got the Russian Dynamite, the Gummy Bear Kid, the Hot Mess, Laurel Van Ness, Chelsea Green, and host of Russell T. Okay. I like it. Got some good versatility going on there.
Oh yeah.
Now, when you transitioned out of in-ring action to focus more on the broadcasting side of things and Russell T and all those endeavors, how did you actually keep yourself motivated fitness wise to not lose your physical routine and physique? Obviously you're still very active in it to this day, but initially when you made that transition, did you find it difficult at all to stay motivated?
Yeah, I did. I think the only thing that really was a godsend was the fact that I have been including physical fitness into, like, my weekly or daily sometimes routine since 2015. So at this point, I'm proud to say that it has become a lifestyle for me, not in, like, a fitness freak way, but just in a way that it makes me feel good and I feel accomplished when I complete, you know, a gym session, because, you know, I didn't have to. I could have stayed at home and watched Netflix and cuddled with my dog, you know. But as far as immediately after my back injury that happened in June of 2019, I literally could not work out. It hurt to work out. I still don't really have full access to, like, the mid part of my back in terms of being able to work it out fully, which really kills me because aesthetically, if my lats were a little bit bigger, it wouldn't hurt anyone. But anyway, that's just, like, the weird fitness person to me. But I stopped working out for, like, 6 months and it was really hard to get back into it.
Yeah.
But I just found that, like, during the pandemic, I was actually able to really, like, focus in on what made me happy. And I started doing at-home stuff, which transitioned beautifully into when the gyms opened up in, like, June of 2020. So yeah, everything worked out in a weird way.
Now I need the tea. What is your secrets to achieving those tremendous abs? Because I'm honestly super jealous.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I don't really know how I get the abs. I'm going to say first off, genetics, because both of my parents kind of have abs themselves and they do not work out at all. So thank you, Mom. Thank you, Dad. But in terms of, like, the work that I actually do on my abs, I think consistency is key. You have to take at least, like, 15 to 20 minutes a day and work out your abs. It has to, like, be, like, you know, a bookend to your workout or begin your workout. A lot of people, like, think that they need to, like, have an ab day, and that's absolutely ridiculous because you're going to lose the effects of that one killer day if you just do it once a week. So I devote 20 minutes at the end of every workout to my abs, whatever it might be. And I think exhausting them and feeling like you're going to die is the key to getting abs, because that specific muscle has to be exhausted and has to go at, like, high repetitions and be able to build endurance in order to have that muscle start to show, I guess. Along with cardio, depending on your body type, of course.
Makes sense. Everybody's body type is definitely different, but I do appreciate your insight because, like I said, I'm super jealous, but keep doing you, Sam.
Thank you so much. I will. Now I just want to get jacked everywhere else. So yeah, we'll see. Work in progress.
Now, I also know something you are obviously pretty keen on keeping your work exclusively to the pro wrestling industry. but you do aspire to someday be the host of The Bachelor.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
How do you think you would actually fare in that environment, though, down the line? You said you're late 30s and 40s. How do you think you would actually fare as being the host of The Bachelor, per se?
I think I'd lose my mind because there's so much bullcrap that goes into reality TV. But a payday is a payday, and I do happen to love the franchise. I've been watching for a few years, so I think I kind of get how it works. You know, just like wrestling, reality TV is its own gimmick, right? And that would be a tremendous honor. I know that Chris Harrison is now out. He's no longer a part of the franchise, which does make me sad. But regardless, I'm here. I'm ready to work and be the bachelorette host or the bachelor host, but not right now because pro wrestling is my first love. It will always be. But yeah, that's probably the only opportunity hosting wise that I'm genuinely interested in at this moment outside of pro wrestling.
Now, the only season of The Bachelor that I have actually seen was last year's season with Peter, which was a complete mess at the finale.
Oh, my.
But it made for good TV, though. So what are your thoughts on that season in particular? It was a hot damn mess at the finale.
It was such a mess. It was awkward. It felt forced. It was fake. It was very clear that the chick that wound up winning was an evil, crazy chick who like lied about where she lived and all of this crazy crap. But you know what? At the end of the day, I'm happy that he wound up dating a more sensible woman in the form of, I believe her name is Kelly.
Kelly. Yep.
Kelly. Yeah. And, you know, she's got her stuff together. Seems like he does too. It seems like they complement each other well. So I believe they're still together. And I'm very much so a believer in the fact that that show, that franchise, can find you love, but it's usually not with the first person you fall in love with there.
No, that was crazy. Him getting engaged to Hannah Ann when his heart, you could clearly tell, was with Madison, but Madison was obviously like, no, I'm out. And then so he kind of just kind of was forced to propose to Hannah Ann, and then obviously that didn't work out, so he tried to go to Madison and that didn't work out.
It's
and so
insanity.
Now he's with Kelly, who it's kind of ironic though, because they obviously met before the show, like randomly in like a hotel, like weeks or months before, so maybe it was meant to be with Kelly all along. But I don't know why she was eliminated at the final six, because she was like too mature or something. It was a dumb reason.
Yeah, it's like you are a strong, confident woman, and I cannot handle this at the present moment. Yeah. There are lots of young girls straight out of college that I need to court.
Yeah,
that's basically
like,
the vibe.
Come on, Peter. Yeah. So, I mean, that was the first season I ever watched, and the last season I watched, it was a mess. I mean, I don't blame you. Yeah. I guess it was good entertainment, but I felt bad for a lot of the people. A lot of the people were crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know what? I mean, it seems like also an opportunity for social media exposure for a lot of people. They want to get paid to exist. So, you know, they do it and then they leave the show and they get a bunch of social media sponsorships. It's all a business.
Yeah, true. Speaking on fascination, though, and things you are also interested outside of wrestling, you mentioned earlier in our interview that you are really well-versed in art. I would say you're a very great art historian, as you studied that in college, like you said. So when and why did you gravitate towards the art world?
It was the most random thing ever. I was in high school, and I've always been a lover of history, really bad at math and science, but really good with, like, you know, literature and history. And it was my senior year. I wanted to take an advanced placement course, a history one. My school did not offer a senior AP history course, but they did offer an AP art history course. And it was with a teacher named Miss Salfeld, who changed my life. And she was said to be like one of the strictest, mind my language, bitchiest teachers in our all-girls school. Lots of estrogen. But, you know, I delved in. I wanted that AP credit to get into college, to look good on my, you know, academic resume. So I did it. And it was the best decision I've made behind going to Lance Storms, because she opened my mind to a whole nother world. Before that, I'd been like kind of still in this tomboy mentality, being a teenager and always kind of wanting to orient myself towards sports, or, you know, being not just not so feminine, to be honest. I've really grown into my femininity as an adult. So just opening my mind to all of this culture, and she was just such an amazing teacher as well. I can't emphasize that enough. And mind you, a little bit of tea on Miss Salfeld, even though no one cares. She's obscenely rich and apparently paid my private school's maintenance bill and worked for free because she loved what she did.
That's insane. Talk about dedication.
I know. So that happened. And then I, you know, just decided to do it in college. And while it's not my first passion, it's something that I very much so gravitate towards still. And when the opportunity arises, financially speaking, I would love to be an art investor and, you know, support artists from the ground up because I have a really good eye for art. Like, I can be in a museum, have never seen a Van Gogh, and know it's a Van Gogh. So, yeah, that's my art story, I guess.
Somebody's going to have to test that someday. You know that, Sam.
Oh, just put Antiques Roadshow on and I'll go off.
Okay. What do you think then throughout all of your studies in art history, or I guess history in general, what do you think has been the most fascinating aspect or theory of art that really captured your interest?
Well, okay. So in terms of like art theory, I really like the aspect of there's something called saudade. It's a Portuguese word that deals with like nostalgia and melancholy and longing for the past. And I myself, while I'm totally satisfied in the present and excited for my future, I very much so love thinking back on the past and kind of just contemplating on history. I know that sounds really weird, but there's so many things today in the world that as someone who studied history her whole life and seen those patterns emerge through different artistic mediums, I see so many things that keep getting repeated and it's so frustrated. And it's also frustrating not, you know, having people necessarily be educated on history and then, you know, creating a generation of people who will potentially continue creating those mistakes in a really big way, being that technology is now a factor. But I'm going to hop off my soapbox with that. I don't want to get too crazy with my stuff. But yeah,
hey, you're passionate about it. Go for it.
Okay. Well, that's my deal. But I really think that history repeats itself, and our generation is such an impressionable one. We can either sink or swim, and I hope that we all swim.
Now, artwork-wise, now, do you have a favorite art piece, whether it's a drawing, a painting, a sculpture, digital media, etc.?
Yes, I do. So look it up on Google. It's beautiful. I've never seen it in person. It's in a private collection, but it is called The Melancholy and Mystery of a Street by Giorgio de Chirico. It was done at the turn of the 20th century, I believe 1911-ish. And this person had experienced the destruction that ravaged Europe in the form of World War I, and that reflected a lot in his work, which was known as metaphysical art, the precursor to surrealism, you know, Salvador Dali, all of the trippy art that we've come to know and love from him. And he also had the idea of saudade instilled in his art. It's hard to describe saudade without like having, you know, that present and having an audience to kind of, you know, show this to within the painting. But yeah, I would definitely recommend looking that up and all of Giorgio de Chirico's work because it's very cerebral and causes you to think. Yeah, and he's got a cool story outside of that.
Now, lastly, you are obviously very well versed in art history and the knowledge and the appreciation for it. But how would you rate your actual art skills, if at all?
A1. I'm a horrible artist. I'm really good at like drawing collages that make no sense, like just little shapes and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I've never really had a lot of creativity in that realm. Like I have a lot of awesome ideas within the realm of like broadcasting, but not so much with art. It's more that I really appreciate, you know, an artist and what they bring to the table, what their story is and what they imbue to their art and their medium.
Okay. I can understand that too. I suck at art completely too. Never really been like a good drawer, but like I appreciate like writing and poetry and like literature, that form of art. But again, like my own skills, I'm like, I can't. So I understand.
Well, it's all in the eye of the beholder, right?
That is like, true.
Someone can view our art, whatever that is. Let's say I draw a particularly good stick figure and you know, have a banging poem. You might not think so, but someone else might.
That is true. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Indeed.
Now, before I let you go, Sam, can you please tell the listeners where they can find you and WrestleT on all your social medias?
Yes, absolutely. So on Twitter and Instagram, you can find me at Sam Leterna. It's Leterna. And then you can also find WrestleT on Facebook if you want to like the fan page. YouTube, my channel, WrestleT, my interview channel is WrestleT by Sam Leterna on YouTube. Check it out. I do episodes almost weekly, a couple times a month.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Sam. It's been a lot of fun, and I really, really appreciate all of your insight.
Thank you so much, and it was so lovely talking to you. You asked really insightful questions and really impressed me. Like, I wish you the best with everything that you're doing, dude.
Thank you, and I wish you nothing but the best of luck. Not that you need it. I really don't think you need it at all. But you are doing amazing things, as, again, you're expanding your knowledge and the hats that you wear, commentating, emceeing now, interviewing, hosting, all of that fun stuff. So I wish nothing but the best of luck to you, and I can't wait to see what the future holds for you.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited to see what the future holds as well, and maybe we'll meet one day in person when the world is fully back to normal.
Fingers crossed. I'm right up in Buffalo, but again, that's the complete opposite side of New York. So fingers crossed, Sam.
I might be up there.
Ooh, okay.
Sooner rather than later. Yes. So this could happen.
We'll discuss. But again, thank you so much for joining me today, Sam.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.